Touchdown!
Unbelievable catch, unbelievable throw.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Takes the snap, Dalton back, looking near side, throws it, picked off, and an open run. It's Joe Hayden, and he's in, touchdown!
And now, here are your hosts, Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagora.
And we welcome you to a Football Friday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. It has been, of course, a very newsy week, a very busy week in Berea. The Browns adding some players, maybe going to add some more. Talking about the reports of a certain running back being in the building. And I guess for his second day, we'll see how these things work out with the Browns and the possibility of adding another player to this roster. And do they do this? I mean, do they go the running back route and keep Ben Tate in the building enough to sign a contract? Do they move on and see what else is out there in the open market? Do they just focus on running back in the draft? That'll be one of the big questions we will get to on today's show. We're also going to hear from Doug Deacon from the Cleveland Browns Radio Network, the color analyst, the former Browns offensive lineman, get his takes on the signings of Carlos Dansby and Dante Whitner, and, of course, the tight end brought in yesterday. So we'll see how this all works out with this football team working its magic, if that's what we can call it, so far in the offseason here and so far in free agency and what it all means. We're also going to have our Fearless Friday forecast. And, of course, I was talking about Jim Dre a second ago. I didn't want to leave his name out of this equation. New guy, blocker. We had him on the show yesterday, and we'll see what he brings to this team. And, of course, Nathan, as we look ahead to what the Browns do next beyond maybe adding a running back, the possibility of this team closing down a deal with Andrew Hawkins, the wide receiver from the Cincinnati Bengals, that the Bengals don't match that, I guess remains hopeful. We're sitting here in day number two of that offer being out there and no word of any match by the Bengals.
Right, that's right. And so far the Bengals, they have till Tuesday, so I'm imagining they will take their time, kind of make that money sit in limbo for the Browns. Not that it would preclude the Browns from doing anything other than probably signing another slot receiver, since I wouldn't expect them to go with two guys who are destined to play on the inside. But you talked about it earlier, Ben Tate, the team has confirmed in the building in Berea, got in last night and is still there today. So hopefully that'll be something that they get done. But the way that I look at it, and I'll stay consistent on it, Ben Tate is a very good player, but the running back position is a position that is easily addressed through the draft. We've seen Kyle Shanahan take a sixth-round pick in Alfred Morris in Washington and make him one of the best running backs in the NFL. So I don't think that it is a necessity to get Ben Tate, but I will say this. If the guy is at the right price, and it certainly seems like the running back market is devalued, take him. Get Ben Tate, bring him into the fold, and go ahead and get a guy in the draft as well. I don't think you can have having two assets at that position, not a bad idea. Plus, Tate's been known to miss some time in his career, but I'll tell you what I like about him. 4.7 yards per carry for his career. Over the last 3 years, he is ninth in the NFL in that category, 4.74 yards per carry. Think about this. Arian Foster, the guy who's the household name, the star there, averaged 4.23 yards per carry in the same offense during the same span. So he has been a pretty successful runner in a zone-blocking scheme. It would be a natural fit with Kyle Shanahan. Even caught 34 passes last year. So I think this is a guy with a lot of potential and reminds me of Michael Turner, and we heard this before from Alex Marvez, who was behind LaDainian Thomas in San Diego for a few years, went to Atlanta, got to become the guy, and really blossomed. And I think that could be the case with Ben Tate. So if the money's right, I say lock him up.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I'm good with having the proven guy. I get that this team has had the ability, this coordinator, Kyle Shanahan, has had the ability to make running backs out of nobodies, out of people who were previously nobodies who became somebodies in his scheme. That is something to look at. That is something to consider. I'm not sure that it would always work for you, especially when you're transitioning to this team, which I still think needs a lot of issues fixed on the offensive line. I'll go in with the assumption that Alex Mack is staying on the Browns, even though that's not a guarantee, but we'll mostly think that that's
Phil Costa yesterday, which is an interesting twist.
That takes one guy out of the mix hopefully, one team potentially out of the mix for Mack. And then you've got Joe Thomas. But after that, What else does this team have? They have to address some issues at guard, and they have to get everybody in sync with this scheme. So is it better to have the back who already knows what he's doing, who's already accomplished in this particular system? And I think it does make sense. And to your point of even going ahead and drafting a running back in addition to signing Tate, that makes sense too, because that back can certainly learn and see something from a guy who's already been in the system. So multiple assets at a position that was an absolute travesty disaster for the Browns last season, I think makes some sense.
Right, and the great news for the Cleveland Browns is that this is the 2014 NFL. Running backs are devalued in terms of not only what you have to pay them, but also where you get to draft them. Guys that would have been first-round running backs in the past are now going in the second, third rounds. It is pushing everything down, so it's easy to sign a guy like Tate at a relatively good price and then draft a guy in the fourth, fifth round, even third round, since you have two third-round picks, to be the complement and also heir apparent for Tate, because I can't imagine Tate would be here for a long, long time, given the way that the running back position is, and also given the fact that he hasn't proven that he can stay healthy through a season. It makes sense to have multiple assets, stimulate that competition, but have a guy who, like I said, ninth in the NFL over the last 3 years at 4.7 yards per carry. He can run it. He can catch it. He knows the offense. I think it would be a great fit.
I think it really would. And the other question then becomes, what else do you want to accomplish, achieve through this remaining part of free agency? The names are going to be less recognizable. The talent level of players out there and the ones that are unsigned, they're unsigned for a reason. The biggest money has been thrown to the players in this first couple of days of free agency. There might be the occasional contract here and there that lends itself to a big number. But in all likelihood, most of what has been spent in the way of huge money has been spent. And I think the rest of the players who are looking for jobs are going to come in at probably less than they thought of. And as I'm looking at some salary comparisons and just reading some folks around the league, different people covering the league on a national basis, doesn't look like the actual numbers in some of the guaranteed money is as large as it's been in the past. So that's an interesting trend that's kind of developed so far. Even with additional cap room, it seems that more and more teams are taking what could be, I'll put it in quotes, taking a conservative approach somewhat to helping themselves. Now, it doesn't apply to the Denver Broncos. They are going crazy. I mean, they're going all in, and no one is doing what they're doing. And I guess every year there is the team that goes to the extreme, right, like the Broncos are doing. But everyone else, and that would include the Browns, fall under the heading of a word that we heard from Ray Farmer, their general manager, prudent. And I think addressing specific needs and then trying to go about it in a way that is affordable under the cap, allowing them to do other things, and, of course, depending on their cap situation. In the case of the Browns, it is definitely about spending some money now, getting some players who are in their advanced stages of their careers can help you right now, but also leaving room to keep some assets that you already have and that you want to extend. And I think that philosophy is ringing true. Now, the money that they've put on the table for the offer sheet for Andrew Hawkins is definitely aggressive, loaded in that first year. There's a lot of risk with that, especially for a guy who played only a half season last year with that high ankle sprain, who I think could still be prone or vulnerable to injury. But the upside when he's healthy is amazing, as we covered yesterday with his run after catch ability, his explosive speed, the way he runs his routes, his sure hands. There are a lot of reasons to love Hawkins as a receiver when he's healthy and when he's contributing. But they had to go about, I think, that offer sheet the way they've done in order to have a chance to get him. You put it out there, yeah, it could do something to ding the Bengals, hurt the Bengals a little bit, but that's not what the main motive was. The Browns want this guy and certainly want the Bengals to have a reason not to match.
Right, and it was a case of the media, I think, helping the Browns achieve their goal ultimately, because the sheet that was actually signed by Andrew Hawkins was not the sheet that was first reported. It was changed to be a little bit front-loaded to make it tougher for the Bengals to match once the initial report came out that the Bengals would, in fact, match that sheet. So that's good. If you want Andrew Hawkins, you believe in him, that's good. I also think it brings in the possibility, to me, when you look at this, it kind of maybe changes the dynamic of what the Browns will do at wide receiver now in the draft. I believe when you have a guy like Hawkins, he's not really going to play outside for you. He is a slot receiver. Edelman can play outside. Sanders could have played both positions. Golden Tate, for example, could have. I think it changes the kind of wide receiver that they are going to draft, and I do believe they will draft one early. And I think it's going to be more of an outside guy. I think it brings in the possibility at 26 of a guy like a Kelvin Benjamin, Odell Beckham. I don't know if it hurts my guy Brandon Cooks in terms of what they're thinking, because he's also small at just over 5'8", 5'9". So right, that could change things if they do, in fact, get Andrew Hawkins, something to keep an eye on there. The one position that I will say there is still excellent talent available for, and in my opinion is a need for this team, and that the price is going to be right based on what I've been hearing, is cornerback. We still need another cornerback here in Cleveland. And I think right now with the prices that are being talked about for guys like Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, Walter Thurman III, Terrell Brown, I think those guys could have excellent value for this team outside opposite Joe Haden. And I'd like to see the team perhaps pursue one of those guys if the prices that are being reported, like Terrell Brown, they're saying 3 years, $10 million. Sign me up for that. Press man corner can do very well. Already has worked with Dante Whitner in the past. I think that would be a nice fit for this Browns team.
Yeah, and there are good names there. As you mentioned, Walter Thurman III, Peanut Tillman, Antonio Cromartie, Terrell Brown. I mean, there are names ranking among the top 10 or so at the position, or top 15 at the position, if you go by what conventional wisdom says. But looking at now Captain Munnerlyn signing with the Minnesota Vikings, D'Angelo Hall re-signing with the Redskins, Corey Graham, signs the deal with Buffalo. He's a Buffalo guy, actually, coming home to Buffalo from Carolina. And then Derek Cox signing with Minnesota on a one-year deal with them. So it's interesting to see how this market has evolved. And I think if you're staying at sort of those upper-tier names that we've just recited here, Nathan, you're right. I think there's going to have to be some patience, because these players and their representatives – definitely have seen the biggest money of free agency, or at least some of the biggest deals, go to corners. And I think that's the thing they're going to keep an eye on, is some of the money that was spent, obviously, to get an Aqib Talib signed in Denver, a $57 million deal. And we know that that's not all the money he's going to get out of that. I mean, he's not going to get that entire amount, but he gets a fair amount. The Darrell Revis signing, of course, with New England on a one-year deal, $12 million. So they're staying within those parameters of what is considered big money for players. And then Brent Grimes stays in Miami with a four-year deal that's reported at $32 million. So you're right about, I think, the numbers that are going to come down for these other players, just because they didn't get in on the first 48-hour money, first 24-hour, 48-hour money. But when is the right time? And look, for the Browns' sake, just be patient. I mean, there's nothing to rush here. So let's see how the next week brings, if it doesn't happen this weekend or through the weekend. And I think they're going to be very busy looking at a lot of different spots. But look at what they've done for the two big names in terms of Dansby and Whitner. They did bring in the small, so-called smaller names in Trufant and Dre, who are two guys that are role players, whereas the other two guys are expected to be difference makers.
Right, and I think you're looking at a situation where now you can bring in a couple middle guys. Ben Tate, who I think is better than that, will be paid on that middle level just because of the position he plays, could certainly help there. If you get Hawkins, that's a wide receiver. To me, you bring in an Arthur Motes, bring in one more inside linebacker, get a corner, and all of a sudden you're looking pretty darn good without spending a ton of money going into this draft, so that you can really focus on just taking the best player available. It seems to me guard is the position that's going to have to be addressed during the draft, because the guys that are left, unless the price is very, very cheap, just don't seem to be a lot of bang for your buck type of guys, and there are some very good guards in this draft.
I'm going to make you very happy right now, by the way.
Go ahead.
So I've been mocking out some draft possibilities here.
Okay.
And guess who I have the Browns taking at number 4?
Who?
I've got him taking your guy,
Theodore.
Teddy Bridgewater. I've been looking at this. I'm still, and we'll see how what information tells us as we go forward. But
sure,
I've been speaking with some people in Houston to just try to get the best handle they have on what the Texans will do. And arrows continue to point in the direction of Blake Bortles, that Bill O'Brien has some kind of an obsession to try to bring him in there. And, you know, just hearing that, I mean, just still sticks with me as maybe something that those dots stay connected. So on the basis of just getting something down on paper, I've done that. And once I've done that, and then I look at, you know, a Greg Robinson, which is conventional wisdom, to the Rams, and somewhere along the line,
Jadeveon
Clowney,
go third.
He's got to go third. You don't take him off the board any sooner, any later than that. And there are the Browns sitting with their choices of obviously more than one quarterback. But Bridgewater is there, and it would be hard for me to believe. And I know Sammy Watkins would be the next thing. And my thinking is Browns would take Bridgewater. Watkins would then end up with the Raiders at the next pick because he doesn't, I don't think, fall out
they
of the top five.
They might have to take Jake Matthews, though, because of the fiasco that just happened with Roger Saffold.
And that's true, too. So they could be stuck with Lyman. But I don't know what their board says because
right.
is Matthews – I know some people have him rated highly. I have him in my top 10. I just don't necessarily have him going
sure.
that high. I'm just thinking if you're true to what your board – Reggie McKenzie, their general manager, looks at their board – and it would be astounding to me, of course, if Watkins got past the Browns and the Raiders
right.
and ended up falling even further than that. But, look, it's mocking out for me. Now it could change. He, of the two guys, I still think Bortles is the better quarterback, which is why, really, the board, as I have it, is falling true to form. Bortles is the guy that would go number one overall. And I know there might be extenuating circumstances adding to that, but I think there's a tremendous upside to this guy. But the more, and I've gone ahead and I spent late last night looking more and more at Bridgewater on tape, and I see what the love affair is all about. I do see what he does as a player that looks at times flawless. And
yep.
it just makes me say, you know what? I haven't seen flawless in a long, long time in a Browns uniform, a quarterback.
No, you have not. I think what's going to tell the story here, and something that I'm keeping my, you know, as I watch this and see how I think this is going to play out, with the release of Campbell and Whedon,
yeah.
there's a huge hole at quarterback. Depending on the level of the veteran that they bring in, I think that could say a lot about what the direction is. I think if you see it be a guy that legitimately can come in, compete with a Josh Freeman, Brian Hoyer
yeah.
as the starter, I think that says, hey, there's a good chance maybe they go Watkins and take a quarterback later on. If they bring in a veteran on the level of, say, a Rex Grossman or somebody that is really just here to teach and be the third quarterback, I think that says maybe we go quarterback early. But I think all options are open for the Cleveland Browns. Yes, I do love Theodore, but, you know, this is a team with Brian Hoyer that didn't lose last year, and it'll be interesting to see how they decide to fill that other quarterback position in addition to the rookie and what that means for what the Browns are going to do at the top of this draft. Friday forecast up next. Doug Deacon at 1:30. We got the Ohio State Buckeye game coming up against Nebraska, so we'll be out just 1 hour today. But that's all coming up on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.